Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign with crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
This is the Friday, February 11th edition of Commodity Week. USDA says corn is being used at a faster pace than expected. We'll see just what our panelists think a 675 million bushel ending stocks number might mean over the coming months today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with the Director of Research for Allendale. His name is Rich Nelson. Our panelists in studio today include Sherman Newlin of Risk Management Commodities out of Hudsonville, Illinois, Matt Bennett of Total Grain Management out of Windsor, Illinois, and Aaron Curtis of Midco from Normal, Illinois. Here's how the numbers in Chicago at the CME Group settled up for the week. Remember, we give you the daily high and low from the day trade and overnight electronic and open outcry from the soft red winter wheat pit. The March contract this week had a high of $8.93 and a quarter, a low at $8.44, and a settlement price at $8.67. March soft red winter wheat up 13 and a quarter cents from the week. July contract at $9.25 and a half, up 17 and a quarter from the previous Friday. March corn futures are $7.06¾ top, bottom at $6.66¼, and the settlement price $7.06½, 28 cents higher. December futures at $6.18¼ were 16½ cents higher from the corn pit. From the soy complex, nearby March beans at $14.55¾ with the high, the low at $14.10¼, settled at $14.16, down 17½ cents, but the Novembers were up 10½. At $13.79 a bushel. March oats at $4.08, up 2½. Live cattle futures at $109.10 at the CME Group. A low at $107.10, settlement price at $107.77½. They were down 47½ cents. March feeders at $126.02, up $1.02½. Lean hogs, February contract, $86.97½ for the high for the week, the low at $84.40. The settlement price for the February lean hogs at $86.40. They finished $1.90 higher.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Our panelists again in studio, Sherman Newlin of Risk Management Commodities out of Hudsonville, Illinois, Matt Bennett of Total Grain Marketing from Windsor, Illinois, and Aaron Curtis of Midco out of Normal, Illinois. Our first question for them, and Matt Bennett, we'll start with you. Tell me what number you think represents pipeline use for corn.
Well, the number that I've been hearing the most is around 700 million. I think, you know, when we look at the fact that we've been using corn so rapidly, it's pretty tough to say exactly what pipeline would be. In the past, I think, you know, anytime we got over a billion, it was, you know, in the last 3 or 4 years, it's been somewhat bearish. Anytime we got under or got close to it, it was getting a little bit bullish. I think looking forward, the job of the marketplace is to ration this somewhat. And I guess I don't feel like we're going to come in around this 700 area, because I think quite a bit is going to happen, you know, because of what the market is currently doing.
Sherman Newlin?
I agree with Matt. I mean, I'm kind of hearing those same kind of numbers between there and a billion bushels. So with the 675 ending stocks, I mean, I feel like those are probably going to go down some more later on. Either way you cut it, we're going to end up really tight at the end of the year.
And Aaron Curtis.
Well, I agree with the other two. I think, you know, using a 1.1 billion bushels a month, like Matt said, typically that 1 billion mark used to be kind of your benchmark, but probably somewhere in this where carryout is currently, you know, this 675, 700 million is
Matt, kind of I was pretty interested in that final comment of yours that suggested the rationing was going to have to take place, and there might be another $300 million show up by the time we get to the end of the season.
That's not exactly what I said, but I will say that I think rationing is currently taking place. Talking to different people in the ethanol business, I think there's definitely a pinch being felt. I think a lot of it depends upon the you know, the status of the individual plant. I know there's a lot of differences from fairly new plants that were bought pennies on the dollar to some plants that were, you know, a lot of money was spent to build them and they aren't paid off yet. So depending on what situation the plant is, I think there's more hurt going on, and we hear more and more every day about maybe a plant closing or shutting down for the time being. I think that's definitely an indication that rationing is beginning.
You agree?
Yeah, I think we're starting anyway, although a 750 seemed to be a pretty popular number here this week as far as a price for the nearby futures to where we start to shut some of that stuff down. I know, you know, Pilgrim's Pride came out this morning and said that they were covered with their needs through August. So there's some of that protection that's been going on here as we move through the summer. But I agree with Matt. I think we're going to start to see some a little bit of pain felt here, especially if we continue to see some of these up days. You know, 8 cents a day sure starts to add up in a hurry.
Sherman, when the USDA reports came out, USDA said ending stocks have dropped. They went from 745 to 675. Is that a good number? And for who?
Yeah. That's a good number. I mean, that's really kind of more in line with what we were thinking it would be, if not maybe just a little bit lower. A lot of folks think they wouldn't drop it at all. I still think they've overestimated some of the stocks from when they added that 300 million bushel back in. I don't really agree with that. So it's a good number to work with for right now, yeah.
Matt, put your farmer cap on. You're looking in the middle of February here pretty shortly at a really high price. You've got crop insurance decisions coming up. I suppose you'll be thinking about how much that's going to cost you. But will you think about it very much, and will it just be pull the trigger and protect myself?
Oh, I think crop insurance has got to factor in for a person. You know, it's pretty amazing to see that we're going to be able to guarantee, if all things hold as though they appear, you know, $800 to $900 gross revenues. Of course, you got to factor in the cost of your insurance, but I think the insurance game is going to be a tool that guys can use. You know, basically government subsidized put is the way I like to call it, and I think that it's something that we really need to use. When we're sitting right here thinking about acreage, in my particular area, there was, you know, an interesting fall in that we were super dry. So the corn on corn acres really didn't get any anhydrous put on. They were spread with fertilizer, but they weren't, you know, didn't get the anhydrous on. So a guy has a decision to make. You know, the fertilizer's not going anywhere. Am I going to go ahead and plant beans, or am I going to, you know, take the risk of having a good enough spring that I can get anhydrous put on ahead of time, or maybe side dress? But keeping in mind that, you know, anhydrous is $250 to $300 higher than what it was last fall when they booked it. So I think there's a lot of things that are going to be factoring into guys' minds, but not the least of them certainly is not going to be insurance.
He brought up the acreage battle. What do you think? There are, what, 9 or 10 million acres that are in play? How do they lay out, Aaron?
Well, I think that's what the market's trying to figure out at this point. I don't think we have enough of corn or beans. At least that's the market's perception moving forward. And I think we continue to see these corn in November beans continue to kind of chase each other around. But I guess my personal opinion is that it's all going to come down to spring weather. And right now, of course, the weatherman is not forecasting a very good outlook at this point, calling for kind of a wet spring and a dry summer. But, you know, my opinion has always been if the weather's good, farmers going to plant corn. So, you know, that's going to kind of dictate what happens here this spring.
Does it matter very much, Sherman, that the cotton producers are thinking about putting 14% more in than they did last year? Now, they had a really low number last year, but does it matter much?
Oh, yeah, it matters. I mean, it's going to take acres away from the corn and beans eventually, you know, so yes, it is going to matter. I when it's all said and done, I don't think the corn market or the bean market's probably going to be happy with acres they end up with. I just don't think there's enough to go around, and farmers, like Matt's saying, you know, maybe not made up their mind yet, leaving themselves a little bit flexible, and the way it looks at the prices, you can't go wrong with either one. So,
crop insurance is a natural put, but is there anything else that a producer should be doing beyond that? And we'll just find out what your ideas are.
Oh, I think there's certainly many things that a guy can look at doing, but whenever you look at these type of prices, the first thing I want to do for my guys is say, you know, let's rewind 2 years to where we were at and the kind of value that we had on the table for our individual farms. What kind of value did we lose by doing nothing? And I think the riskiest thing we can do is nothing. I mean, typically, you know, put options are always a good thing. To put a floor underneath for a guy, just flat out getting your sales to a comfortable level, whether that means selling what adds up to be not too many bushels this year just to cover your variable costs. It's amazing how few of bushels you can actually sell to do that. So I would most certainly be doing something as we go in. I'd be selling into the rally.
Sherman?
Oh, yeah, there's several different things you can do. I agree with Matt. I mean, you can definitely go ahead and start getting a little bit of new crop sold yet. I think these futures are probably heading to that 650, 660 area. You know, you'll be able to lock in some Jan prices or some fall prices above $6 for new crops. You're getting a percentage of that sold. And then also what we're going to be looking for our guys is buying some December put options. If we can look at a $6 put for 50 cents, you put a 550 floor under you, and you can sleep at night. I mean, that put takes you all the way out almost through the end of the year.
Yeah, it's hard to argue, Todd, with either one of what they said. I think as we continue to move higher, you know, your risk obviously continues to increase on the downside more than it does on the upside. So continue to be proactive here, whether it's using options or just flat-out cash sales. I think you got to continue, like Matt said, continue to be a rewarder of the rally.
What are the risks that are evident in the marketplace at this point? Aaron, if you look out, what things could happen that would be, I don't know that there are any catastrophes waiting there, but what could happen that would move the market sharply lower?
Well, I think two things that kind of watching is obviously what the funds want to do. You know, the CFTC continues to be in their comment period moving forward here as they continue to rein in speculation. We've seen the ICE futures exchange here last week kind of limit some of the cotton movement as we move into delivery period as they tell people that you have to have an economic interest. I think that's an interesting thing, what will happen with the government intervention as far as the funds. And then the big one, of course, is still what China does. You know, every time they come out with an interest rate increase, we kind of have a step back and we see the markets move a little bit lower. It's typically been just limited to a one-day move down. But, you know, if something would happen with them as they continue to try to make efforts to slow their economy, I mean, that's obviously could be a big negative to commodities.
I think whenever I open the newspaper and I see headlines that say, you know, ethanol is the cause for rising food prices, I start to get a little bit nervous. I think that we're getting a lot of press that is showing up that is basically more or less blaming high food prices on ethanol. And I'm not saying that, obviously, it's got something to do with it, but I think there's so many places where there's unrest in the world and there's a lot that has to do with food. And I think that, as Aaron said, who knows what's going to happen in China? There's a lot of mouths to feed. But, you know, if they come out and say, you know what, we're not getting our economy cooled off the way we want to, we're going to have to be a little more drastic. I think that that can have a pretty big effect. I also think this ethanol profitability situation could be a big one. You know, whenever we quit seeing 95 million bushels disappear every week and maybe take that down to 85 and we realize, you know what, we're going to use maybe 4.5 this year. I'm not saying that's going to happen, but if it did, it'd make a big difference to throw 400 million bushels right back in.
Well, the VTEC is in place. That's the 40 for the blender tax credit. So that makes ethanol at the blender's pump or at the blender profitable. That's there for a year, unlikely to go away, I would think, but you know, who knows what kind of pressure is there. But even without that, isn't it the price of crude that you have to watch to see whether ethanol folds somewhere along the lines? And it doesn't look like it's going to happen.
Most certainly. I think if you talk to an ethanol guy, he'll say one of two things is going to have to happen. Either corn's going to have to quit rallying so much, go lower, or crude is going to have to rally. I mean, they're very pointed about that.
Yeah, I think if from a farmer standpoint, you got to continue to hope you pay quite a bit of money for gas at this point. I mean, that continues to drive that market, right? And keep in mind, this ethanol byline on the supply-demand report is mostly government-mandated. I know the Secretary of Ag has gotten a lot of heat this week about whether or not we can feed the people while we continue to drive our cars. So you got to continue to watch that moving forward, especially if we have some sort of a weather problem. Some of that demand can sure disappear.
Well, government mandate's kind of interesting because we're way above the government mandate, so it's there, but ethanol is chewing through corn much more quickly than the mandate would ever imagine at this point. So you have ethanol that doesn't look like it's going to stop anytime soon, right? And you also have a livestock industry that shrunk. Then we saw the inventory numbers were down, but they're in a good place because of the price, so they're not likely to stop chewing through what corn they have. That leaves the export market, and we're all thinking that China might import corn at some point, I guess.
They very well might once they come back off their holiday. So if that would happen, I think the market could go back up to the old highs again.
We'll see what happens, and we'll see more when we talk with Rich Nelson here in just a bit. He's from Allendale. You're listening to Commodity Week. This one was recorded on the 11th day of February.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. This was a pretty calm but cold week across the state of Illinois. There was some snow that fell last Saturday across central and southern Illinois, up to 6 inches, in fact. Other than that, some snow showers and flurries occurred with the passage of the cold front this week, and it has been relatively uneventful. Temperatures were 5 to 7 degrees below normal this week, with the coldest weather during the middle of the week. Low temperatures Thursday morning were the lowest of the season so far in many areas. Low temperatures were below zero across the state and ranged from 24 below zero in northwestern Illinois to 3 below zero in far southern Illinois. Illinois residents will be getting a break in the weather starting this weekend. The upper-level trough that has been persistent over the eastern U.S. this winter will shift to the west, allowing our temperatures to moderate. We won't be seeing any spring-like temperatures here, at least not soon, as the deep snow cover will modify the air. However, next week temperatures will be averaging well above normal with highs getting into the 40s. There is a chance for some rain showers, yes rain, about the middle of the week. While it is too early to call this winter over, keep in mind that the start of meteorological spring is on March 1st, a little over 2 weeks away. For the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
This is the February 11th edition of Commodity Week.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
I'm Todd Gleason from University of Illinois Extension. Our panelists in studio today include Matt Bennett of Total Grain Marketing out of Windsor, Illinois, Aaron Curtis of Bentco from Normal, Illinois, and Sherman Nolan of Rich Risk Management Commodities out of Hudsonville, Illinois. Our guest on the phone line today, Rich Nelson from Allendale. Rich joined Allendale in 1997 and has advanced his way from staff economist to director of research. He's been instrumental in helping develop some production forecasting and pricing models that Allendale uses. He writes articles and generates reports for various venues. And Rich is on the phone line with us this afternoon. Hi, Rich. How are you today?
Doing great, guys. Good to be here.
Well, tell me, what you thought of the USDA reports this week and how you view the corn market in the coming month?
you know, for that USDA report, obviously quite a big surprise to the industry. And I got to say, even though we were on the low end of the range for the corn export or for the ending stock numbers that USDA gave us, I'll tell you, it was a clear surprise even to us. I had thought that they might drop a little bit out of that feed usage number and also a little bit on exports too, and kind of balance out their big changes for the corn there. So as far as that goes, definitely a surprise and kind of reinvigorated some of this bullish feeling here.
Rich, it's Aaron. Assuming two things. First of all, that USDA demand projections are correct, and assuming good weather. Is this a one-year fix or a multiple-year fix on increasing ending stocks?
You know, I'd love to say this is going to be a one-year fix, but I just don't think so. I guess the key you mentioned there is certainly if we get the weather and we get the yield, can we get the acres? And the more I talk with producers each and every day, though it seems like a lot of Illinois guys might still stay with maybe a little more corn, at least for some of the guys we speak with, I still can't say we've got the Nebraska guys or the Iowa guys back on board with more corn. So unless we get an extra 2 million acres at a minimum, and in our feeling an extra 3 to 4, I don't think we're going to get a fix on this one here in a one-year deal.
Rich, is Sherman, what do you think that your best guess is on the acreage then? I mean, some people are thinking we can get to 93. I personally don't think we can get there. What are you guys looking at?
You know, Sherman, one thing, you definitely made a very good question, a very good point there as far as that acreage argument. Right now, our numbers, we're sitting at 91.5, which is an extra 3.3, and that barely gets you out of the woods. And like I said, that's numbers assuming prices and things like that. But like I said, the more I talk to producers, I just don't think that these guys are in that mindset yet. I don't think we've got the price yet to get these guys back in the ballgame here.
Yeah, Rich, this is Matt. We were talking a little bit before you got on here about ethanol, and you know we're hearing some rumors about people maybe shutting down, at least for the time being, or profitability factors. And what's your assessment of that, first of all? And second of all, moving forward, at what point do you think that it's really going to get serious with people not being able to make money?
You guys made some really good points earlier on, and I did get a chance to listen to what you were talking about. And for that ethanol issue, you know, for January, they made about 19 cents for every bushel that they bought from farmers. So on that end, they were still making money in January. I think you made a good point as far as saying, well, how about up ahead? And as far as right now, we're seeing ethanol prices keep track with corn. So for right now, I don't see a major problem in slowing down this ethanol market right off the bat. You know, maybe in about 3 to 4 months, but at least for the near term, though we hear the rumors, I don't see anybody making any major changes yet.
What do you think's left yet to come into the marketplace? For instance, if Argentine's crop isn't as good, does that mean we get more exports out of the deal for corn? And when do soybeans from South America hit, and does that matter very much at this point?
You know, as far as the first question you mentioned there, as far as the Argentine crop, if it's not that good, the fact that USDA is still high on their numbers, 22 million tons, I believe it was, for USDA, versus the exchanges down there saying 19.5 and 19.7. So as far as that goes, it looks like we still have to have U.S. to get a little more realistic on this core number. So I think we can maybe pick up some exports perhaps in a few months once the trade realizes there is a slight deficit to that Argentine corn crop. To the other issue you mentioned, how about this Brazilian soybean market? When will they take over the export market? And it looks like about another 2 or 3 weeks to get some of this harvest advancing more towards the central areas. I think at that point you'll hear more talk of maybe some beans getting down to the ports and actually getting loaded on ships here. So I'd say about 2 or 3 weeks left before we actually get to see something substantial out of those guys.
Hey, Rich, you touched on ethanol just a little bit, but as we continue to talk about this demand rationing and what prices that slowed down, what are some of the things you're watching as far as a demand moving forward to kind of show some of those signs that maybe things are starting to slow down?
Each time we plug in these things on the ethanol side, not only are we just looking at corn, but obviously the DDGs, and second point, of course, are more important than either one of those is the ethanol price itself. So I'm looking for any weakness on the ethanol pricing issue to be a first sign that we are seeing some of that demand rationing. As far as If we see the ethanol price stabilize and we advance maybe another 15 cents on corn, then you can probably make that argument that we are going to see some slowdowns there. That's one key issue there. Even on the demand rationing issue, I believe as Todd mentioned, well, how about the livestock guys? And at least for the hogs and chicken, so far they have the pricing is phenomenal. So with hogs sitting with $88 break-evens, I don't see these guys slowing down yet.
Rich, do you see China coming back in and buying any corn? And if you do, where do you think prices might head before planting then?
You know, I certainly think we've got to see China buy some corn at some point this year. Maybe it'll be later this summer. One thing I'm waiting on the China issue here is I don't think we're going to see them make any major purchases until they see that new crop get planted and also see how the first 2 or 3 months of progress goes. And I think maybe by summer you might see them maybe pick up a little bit here and there. Certainly not the amounts that, you know, U.S. grain groups are hoping for. But it should be maybe 1 to 3 is what we're plugging in for our numbers right now.
Yeah, Rich, you know, it's hard for farmers to market high-priced corn just as much as it is low-priced corn. And, you know, we hear guys come in every day that are, you know, they're stewing about this. And I guess what would be your best advice? Obviously, it depends on a person's farm. But, you know, the typical farmer that, you know, isn't real maybe excited about doing anything other than straight-up cash sales. I mean, where would you be percentage-wise right now, or what are you looking for triggers to make you know, help you make some sales?
You know, as far as this goes, on the we've kind of done a little different price or different marketing plan for most of our guys here here in the office this year compared to last. We're just more or less doing a trailing stop type of strategy, meaning here's the current price we just hit in this week. Let's knock 35 cents off that price and not sell anything until that's taken out. And each week we kind of ratchet that higher number up here. So in terms of that, that's the type of strategy that we're kind of using, and it's kind of keeping our nose clean right now as far as being more realistic with the way this market wants to price corn this year.
We have not discussed yet the wheat market. Would you take that up and what the fundamentals tell you about that marketplace? They look better than most others.
Certainly do. The fact that though you've got some countries with some large stocks, India being a key point right there, they're obviously not exporting. So as far as the available wheat supply, certainly tight this year. Questions about winter kill during the past 2 weeks. You know, in terms of our numbers, have we knocked off 50 million bushels or up to 150 million bushels out of the plains? That's another big question that we won't know answers for a few weeks. You know, in terms of the general pricing, we think that we probably will see this market still do some slow, steady rises until we get some of those spring rains coming here in March, April here.
Hey, Rich, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Rich Nelson is Director of Research for Allendale. Now time for a final word from our panelists in studio. We'll start with you, Matt Bennett.
Yeah, just keep in mind, guys, that this is a really good opportunity this year, and maybe doing nothing is the riskiest thing you can do right now.
Sherman Newland?
Yes, the market's offering us good opportunities to get some grain sold. I mean, whether you use puts or some cash sales, there's nothing wrong with getting started now.
And Aaron Curtis?
Well, more on a personal note, Todd. You know, we lost a great commodity guy this past week, Paul Bates, kind of a mentor of mine, really helped me get me started in this business, also a great friend, so condolences out to his family, and he'll certainly be missed.
You've been listening to Commodity Week. Our panelists in studio include Aaron Curtis of Midco out of Normal, Illinois, Sherman Newland of Risk Management Commodities from Hudsonville, Illinois, and Matt Bennett of Total Grain Marketing. He's in Windsor, Illinois. If you get the opportunity, please do dial this number, 217-244-9455. We are supported in part by you, our listeners. Pledge your financial support at 217-244-9455. This is the February 11th edition of Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.